Good morning and welcome back, Nach enthusiasts. We are back in Sefer Melachim Beis, Perek Chof Aleph. And this Perek over here is a Perek which takes a plunge from the excited and you know, the momentum of Yechizkiel now brings us to the episode of Menashe. Menashe and Amon, the son and the grandson of Chizkiel, and we now take a plunge. Unfortunately, remember, as we know, that Chizkiel saw that he was going to have a son who was terrible. And in fact, he was as terrible as Chizkiel saw him to be in the future. He had a colossal ruler reign of 55 years of Yerushalayim, and he did everything bad that could possibly be done. So in fact, the Melachim tells us that not only did he bring back the bamos, the personal altars that Chizkiel had removed, but he brought altars for Avodah Zorah, Baal, Asherah. Everything which Achav had done in the north, he brought in. He put up temples to every Tzavo HaShemayim, all the luminaries in the heaven. He bought he built the Mizbechos for the places where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, and instead he bought altars for all these celestial hosts in the temple itself. He introduced Molech. He brought his own son to Molech through fire. He brought in the soothsayers, the future tellers, into the land of Israel. He made a Pesel and Asherah, an idol in the house of Hashem. All these terrible things that he did. In fact, Tanakh tells us that he did worse than not only all the kings before him, but in fact, worse than even the Amorites who came before them, before Israel was even here. That's how bad it was. Some say that the political backdrop is because right at this moment, these are the gods of none other than the Assyrians. Remember, the Assyrians are still the power of the north, even though they're fighting off Babel at this point in time. And so to come into political correctness of the time, that's what he's doing. Nonetheless, whatever his motivations are, this is what he's doing. Tanakh tells us that Hashem gave a curse to Israel because of this, to Yehuda, because of these actions. And that is that there's going to come a time, Hashem says, that Asher kol shomo tzalal no shtei on osnov. There's going to come a curse on Jerusalem, and anybody who hears it, their ears will tremble in fear. They will shake. That's the same words we used to hear. We heard the prophecy describing to Eli, the prophet, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, about the destruction of the Mishkan. Clearly, this is about the slating of the destruction of Yerushalayim, that all the enemies will enter Yerushalayim and flatten it to the ground. This is the ultimate destruction of the Churban Rishon. Even though there are kings who are going to come after this, it sounds like it was slated here according to this version in Sefer Melachim Aleph, in Sefer Melachim Beis. We have to ask ourselves, did Yoshiyahu, his grandson, ever have an opportunity to change this? Was there really space to change? Very hard questions we have to ask based on this accounting, which we're seeing here, this interlude in Pasuk Yud to Yud Ches in Perek Chof Aleph. It is interesting to know that Tanakh makes a point as well over here, and in the most terrifying statement, "V'gam dom noki shofach Menashe harbe ma'od." He spilled lots of innocent blood in Pasuk Tes Zayin. What does that mean? Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. That is a reference to the fact that he didn't just kill people who are innocent. He killed the individual who was innocent. And that is, he killed his grandfather, Yeshayahu Anavi. Remember, his daughter married Chizkiyahu? And that was, he killed his own grandfather. Obviously, his grandfather must have spoken out against him. His grandfather must have spoke to him, and he killed him. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the level of depravity that he sunk to? At this point in time, the Melachim tells us that he died, and he was buried, and his son took over from him. His son, Amon, was no better than him, did all the terrible things, went in the same way as his father's, but after 2 years was rebelled against by his avodim, by his servants. The Rav Bini Lau points out that this was the bourgeois to upper class of society, and they placed his son Yoshiyahu on his throne. Now, let's just looking at this parak as a whole, it is fascinating. This is one of the times in Tanakh that we cannot simply read this part of Tanakh alone. We have to compare it and contrast it to what happens later on in Tanakh. And that is, we need to read Sefer and Divrei HaYamim Beis. We need to go in that particular area to Perek Lamed Gimel, which gives us the parallel account. And if we read it there, there's an extra additional paragraph added. And that is, is that although it sounds like he dies in evil, he dies in debt, in spiritual debt at the end of Menachem Beis, nonetheless, in Deuteronomy there's a different account, and that is that Hashem sent the armies against him of the, it's unclear, it's the Melech Ashur, but it was he was taken to Babel. Right, it's not clear if this is the Assyrians or the Babylonians, but they take him to torture back to Babel or Assyria. And he, in fact, it's described that the Gemara adds in the extra details is that he was placed in a pot, a cauldron, to be boiled alive and tortured to death. And as Tanakh tells us there in Pasuk Yud Beis, Ka'atzer lo'chila es p'nei Hashem elokav v'yukonam o'od milifnei elokei avosav. That as he was in terrible pain, this is in the pot, as he's being boiled, he called out to Hashem to save him. He was humbled. Hashem dug underneath him to listen to him. Menashe acknowledged that Hashem was the God. He was brought back miraculously to Yerushalayim. And when he returned, he destroyed the idols, removed everything that he had done beforehand. He was able to remove it all, but Bnei Yisrael themselves still carried on serving Avodah Zarah. He was not able to fully destroy the Bamos, but nonetheless, he tried to reform his life. So this is a whole episode which is not mentioned in Sefer Melachim, fascinatingly enough. This ambivalence is reflected later on when you read the Mishnayos in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the beginning of Perek Chelek, tells us that Shloisha Melachim v'arba hediotis einoim chelek lo'olam haba. There are three kings who do not get a chelek in Olam Haba, and one of them is Menashe. Rabbi Yehuda describes that Menashe yesh lo chelek lo'olam haba. That Menashe really did get his chelek and his portion in the world to come, as it says in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, that he prayed to Hashem and Hashem returned him. So this ambivalence as to whether or not he came through or not is reflected in both the accounts of Melachim versus Divrei Hayamim and the reports of the Tanakhama, the basic default position of the Mishnah versus Rabbi Yehuda's account of Menashe's ultimate end. Part of this is the complexity of our relationship to him. On the one hand, he was a terrible, terrible king, more terrible than anyone who had come before him, as is clear from Sefer Melachim. On the other hand, it sounds like he did do tshuva. In fact, the Gemara goes on to tell us, just to add color to this particular passage, that when he was in this pot, he called out to Hashem, the angels closed up the passageways for that tefillah. Meaning to say, they said it is not acceptable that a person who is so evil, whose tefillah should actually come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it says, Vayaser lo Hashem. Hashem answered him, that it means to say that he dug a passageway under his throne for Menashe's tefillah to come through, and he actually listened to him to save him. What a remarkable description. Where did he get the capacity to be able to do that kind of tshuva? I believe it goes back to what we learned about yesterday in Perek Chof, where Chizkiyahu, his father, when on his very deathbed, when told by a prophet that you're not going to live, did not listen, and said, you know what, I've got a tradition for my father and my father's father, that even when the Cherev Chada, even when the sword is placed on one's neck, one does not stop doing tshuva, and that's what he did. That trait went down to his son Menashe, and Menashe was able to, in fact, do tshuva. How far that tshuva penetrated is a matter of debate, which is reflected in both the Tanakh and in Chazal themselves. And this gives us the more complex nature of Menashe himself as a king. What we need to think about over here is as we go forward, is was there a chance for his son or his grandson Yoshio ever to change that around? Was there any space for change to happen, or is everything slated for destruction because of the level of depravity that he reached? That this allows us to enter into the next era of hope, the next era of tshuva, and that is Yoshio HaMelech, the greatest king to do tshuva among all of the kings of Israel, as Tanakh tells us in its own words. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.